Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Into sports.
20 yards out. Urs to shoot. Don't shoot. Oh, what a goal from Fabinho. Wow.
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, you're very welcome along. So loads to discuss. Champions Cup draw today and Ireland have named their starting 15 for the trip to Paris on Saturday with a Six Nations Championship at stake. Brian O'Driscoll is with us evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Great to have you with us. Four tries in Paris. No pressure.
Yeah, like it's a huge challenge. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be, first of all, just to beat this France team, because I think we're dealing with a completely different proposition on other years. Their investment in youth has almost hit the jackpot immediately, obviously with that performance against England early on in the year. Some incredibly impressive signs last weekend against Wales, and you just get the sense that they are a coming team. The way they kind of match the physicality with some of the nuances of their back play as well, and some of the skill sets of individuals. It just looks like a nice combination. So it's a huge challenge, a huge task to try and score four tries. I think, first of all, you got to try and go and win the rugby match and not worry about four tries. But it'll be really interesting to see whether they, continually kick to the corner the way they have done so far in the championship, and whether they try and build a score if they get penalty opportunities, or whether they go after those tries and chase the trophy, success. So we'll see.
That is the interesting thing, isn't it? Like, first 15 minutes when they have options to take points or kick for the corner, what they do. There is the obvious argument to kick for the corner and build up the tries. But I suppose equally, if you're winning on the scoreboard, you can break a team and then maybe hit them for a couple of late tries as well.
Yeah, and I think if you always look back at cup teams, and it always reminds me of Munster in the 2000s, where they used to keep the scoreboard ticking over and keep the pressure that would they be forcing on the opposition to give up penalties, kick 3, 6, 9, and then all of a sudden they'd score a try and they'd be out of sight, and felt as though opposition hadn't done a huge amount wrong. And there's still very much a place for cup rugby, but with this bonus point structure, and I saw Johnny Sexton referencing it in the papers during the week. He was saying some ex-internationals were on his back a little bit about going to the corner a bit earlier than maybe they would have. But then, as a result, this weekend, they've got the outcome of the championship in their own hands. If they hadn't gone and done that, maybe they wouldn't gotten the bonus point tries. And it's a fair point, but it's something that Ireland did under Joe Schmidt an awful lot and have continued on under Andy Farrell, that with those kickable opportunities, they tend to go after seven pointers, and they've coughed up one or two of them. Don't think they've got 100% return from their bravery going to the corner, but it's probably a favourable return, and it's hard to argue the point. And I suppose if you contrast that with what Wales did at the weekend, they were kicking their penalties from everywhere and building a score, but even that wasn't enough because of the weaponry that France possessed. So it's hard to know what's the right way to do it. I think they'll probably stick to what they've been doing so far in the Six Nations and continue going to the corner, and they'll feel as though they have tries in. There's a lot of confidence built off the back of last weekend's performance, so why not play on that?
Yeah, well, I suspect if you asked Joe Schmidt about it, he'd probably produce several reams of paper backing up the rationale. You suspect he's looked into it in a big way. The other aspect with this game is it's not just like it's one team going for a bonus point. Both know they need to put up a decent tally. It would seem like France are more suited to a loose, wild game where tries are happening from the off. I mean, that is the other aspect here. That would suit them down to the ground if Ireland get very loose very quickly.
Yeah, I think it would. I think if you look at how they started the game at the weekend, you know, they couldn't have asked for a worse start. You know, a drop kick off and then straight away scrum pressure, and Wales had scored literally on the minute mark. So you can be sure that they won't, you know, that won't happen them 2 weeks on the bounce. But Ireland have to be careful. We've kind of gone down the rabbit hole a few times over in Paris over the years, and it can be a long night at the office if you don't get it right early on. The only thing is that they don't have a French crowd to G up and get on their sides. But conversely, you know, Ireland don't have that opportunity of trying to silence that crowd and the opportunity to get them on the French back. So everything, all of those outside emotions almost are negated. So it's just two teams going at each other. And on the basis of what we saw and what we've seen over the course of Six Nations, I think France are favourites and quite comfortable favourites. But it's not inconceivable that Ireland could go over there and steal another victory as they did a couple of years ago. But I just think that four tries against this French defence will be much better off for having had an outing last week. I think that's probably a step too far.
Yeah. Going back to your own days, and, you know, French are about to launch counterattack and 80,000 in the Stade de France are up. They do strike you as a team who feed off that. Like, different countries will feed off the crowd at different points, you know, and an Irish team, you know, a mall jumps to mind, for instance. But French team, ball in hand, some kind of shape there, and they're eyeing up a length of the field try. Being in the midst of that as a player, I would say, is a bit head spinning.
Yeah, I think it's because they're more capable of doing it than most of the teams. So I think they thrive on doing the amazing. You think about Philippe Saint-André's try in Twickenham all those years ago, back in the early 90s, you know, from their own, from a kick at goal that they caught, and, you know, and rather than put it down, like, that's one of the all-time great tries. And I think of all teams, when France do something special, and we've seen it particularly through Toulouse with, you know, the manner in which they've been playing over the course of the last couple of years, the spine of the team is coming through the Toulouse halfbacks in Tamac and Dupont. So you just feel as though they have the capabilities of creating something from nothing, way more than lots of other teams. Other teams, particularly Ireland, have to build their scores massively, whereas some of the tries scored at the weekend for France didn't seem to have to go through too many phases. It was just a bit of, you know, magic from Vakatawa or Teddy Thomas, that little chip and chase. So when you have that much X factor and then you heap that on top of some of their power game as well, it just makes for a great combination. I just think they're going to be a really, really tough proposition this weekend.
So you used a phrase there, which we can get stuck into from an Irish point of view, that the French have players who can create something from nothing, you know, and all last week, the phrase which tenants came out from camp was a heads up rugby kind of a thing. Like, it would strike me, we don't have those type of players, and therefore the Joe Schmidt detail was very welcome because it gave the players something to work around and work towards, and they were all on the same page and as a group became very effective. Whereas, you know, it would scare me if we're going away from all that detail a little bit and there was a degree of, like, well, just go out there and play what you see and do your thing, because we don't seem to have that arsenal.
But we won't know if we don't try it either, will we? That we've got to feel as though there is a form of evolution. And you've got to remember, the players are happiest when they're playing a style they want to play. And this team, obviously tired of the power play game and the, you know, strategy game, the systemic game, that, you know, worked so well for the first few years, but, you know, ultimately was their undoing in the Rugby World Cup. So players have had enough of that and they want to break free from the shackles that they felt confined within, and now, you know, there's this ability to be able to marry the two of obviously play confrontational rugby and play to a system, but then have an ability to elaborate and play heads up and throw offloads. I think we'd way more offloads in that game than I'd seen an Irish team for quite a few years. And a lot of them came in the last 15 or 20 minutes when they'd softened the Italian defence and fresh legs came on. But even early on, Hugo Keenan got a couple of offloads away to James Ryan. Guys were pushing the pass a small bit, and coaches won't give out to you. Certainly Andy Farrell's not going to give out to you if the occasional one doesn't go to hand when you're trying things, provided, you're the next time it does go to hand. So I think it was a really impressive step forward, albeit it was against an Italian team that I didn't think offered a huge amount. But you can't question the opposition that are thrown at you. All you can do is perform yourself. And I thought they performed very well, considering they hadn't played together for well over 6 months.
And Brian, offloads aside, when you looked at the general shape of the team when they were in possession, were they doing things very differently to what we had seen last year?
No, when we were on ITV, we kind of highlighted the setup of the pod system. A lot of the time when they're trying to regenerate fast ruck or slow ruck ball to fast, they have this pod of three players playing off nine with, a back out behind, sitting behind the pod. If it hits the first or the third ball carrier in that pod, it tends to be carried into contact. If it hits the second guy, he can tip it on to the third. If there's a shooter out of the line, he can carry into contact. But also what he's doing then is throwing the ball out the back to Jonathan Sexton or a Robbie Henshaw or a Bundiaki. And then they have another forward coming short that they can hit up to crash into the middle to keep the defense honest. Or they can go out to the width again with another forward in a wider channel. So we are beginning to see a little bit more of the Ireland shape to expect as to how to regenerate slow ruck ball into fast ruck ball. I don't think they get caught up in how often they have to get into that shape. It's literally just if things slow down. Mm-hmm. If their opportunity isn't to get to a soft shoulder and throw an offload, if it feels as though the defence have had a big collision and slowed the ruck ball down to 3 or 4 seconds or 5 seconds, then's the time to set up again and try and regenerate quicker possession.
And do you like that shape? Do you think that's good?
Yeah, one other thing they do as well is they don't get caught in the 5 meter channel. So they do what New Zealand do when they get out into the 5 meter channel. They kind of want to play between the tens. As soon as you get outside the 10 from the touchline, it means there's a huge defensive wall coming against you. They don't have to hedge their bets on both sides of the ruck. They can load one side so they can fire off the line. So what they're doing when they get out to the 5 meter channel as well is they're running two players in short to soften the defense up, and they're going out the back to Jonathan Sexton, who then throws it into midfield. The best place to be, to attack from is midfield. Why? Because you obviously have to put guards and second and third defenders on either side of the ruck, and it negates your line speed an awful lot more than if you're on an edge where you're loaded with 7 or 8 players that can just shoot off the line and not worry about drifting. So that's why they're looking to get to the middle as often as they are.
Right, okay. So there's a definite logic to that. You mentioned the line speed. So Johnny Sexton's talking about that this week. Sean Edwards is now very much on board and seems to have, won over the French camp. I mean, the Edwards thing could have gone either way, but they seem to have taken to the message he's brought to the camp. So Johnny Sexton was saying, Sean Edwards has been excellent with Wales over the years. We have found them particularly tough to break down with that line speed. And that's been something that we've been talking about a lot. So you mentioned get to the centre of the field. It means it's harder for that line speed to shoot up because more players have to help out at the ruck. What else will Ireland do? Just picture the scene. We're in possession. It's around midfield. Line speed is coming up. We're going through the phases. Not much is happening. That's kind of the image that you don't want.
Yeah, I think, but you have to be aware that you can kick to regather as well. You don't have to play with ball in hand the whole time. You think about the effectiveness of different kicking strategies over the course of the last 6 months. Leinster have had a lot of success with that grubber in the 22. The kick pass. Exeter have almost won a European Cup on some of the strategy around their kick pass. So it's not just giving up possession. I think there's a lot of understanding as to why teams are kicking, and when you're kicking on your own terms rather than the opposition's terms, well, then the power is still in your hands. I think if you counter that with something like we saw against Italy last week, they completely kicked on Ireland's terms. I thought their kicking strategy was appalling. they were kicking down the throats of, you know, the two wingers who were in the backfield or the 10 in the backfield with a winger, rather than kicking down the middle of the park. And I think you won't see France doing that. I think Ntamack a good few times against Wales found grass down the middle. So don't be afraid from an Irish perspective to kick the ball when you're lined up with, you know, 10, 11 defenders, you know, against, you know, some pretty meaty, you know, humans in there as well, some big collision winners. You have to be conscious of saving yourself for later on in the game as well. And to go aerial contest, provided it's not a box kicking fest, again, I think people will understand. And it's a means to gain possession back as well and give everybody a bit of a breather.
And Brian, you mentioned the box kick. So, it was noticeable by its absence at the weekend. That will be back, I presume, against tougher opposition.
Yeah, like we did have it relatively easy against Italy. You know, they gave us a field day at the Ruck. We were able to set on the line really well and get off the line. So it just felt as though all the things fitted into place. When you come up against sterner opposition, when there aren't as many opportunities to, you know, pass the ball, you don't have as much time with ball in hand, I think there is going to be more of an onus on Conor Murray to box kick, to relieve pressure, when things become a little bit stagnant and players do need a small bit of rest from their ball carrying duties, I do think they're going to have to go to the air. You've got three pretty good operators in the air in Conway, Keenan and Stockdale, particularly chasing kicks. Conway, I would say, didn't have his best day, which is unusual for him considering its consistency, but you'd imagine he won't have two games like that on the bounce. His basics are brilliant. So don't shy away. Just because we don't want to see a kick fest doesn't mean that you can't still go to it effectively. You see, Jason Gibson-Park's first touch when he came on the park was that little grubber kick for Johnny Sexton deep in his own 22. So the ambition is there, and you just have to have a bit of cunning and understanding when is the time to box kick, what the right strategy is and why you're doing it, rather than when your hand is being forced.
The two debutants, Connors and Keenan, give us the good and bad. What do they bring to the party?
At the moment, there wasn't a whole lot of bad. When you're watching it in real time in a studio, you sometimes don't always get the full sense of what people are doing well. And then when I watch it back, Connor's appetite in defense, his willingness to get back to his feet, his tackle technique is something else. His knee almost trails the ground as he's making contact. And sometimes you lose a lot of your impact if you lose your feet, but he doesn't seem to. And because he just stops people in their tracks, he's not trying to drive them backwards a la Sam Underhill in the World Cup in Japan against New Zealand. He was trying to be a collision winner as well as a chop tackler. Whereas I think Connors is just a chop tackler, but then obviously he gets back to his feet to potentially steal the ball, but his willingness to get back in and become a tackler again on the next phase is probably what stands him apart in that category. Mm. And you throw on top of it, a try on debut, hitting a lot of rooks, good line out options. So there's a lot to be to be reminiscing about. I think with Keenan as well, for me, it was almost a more impressive performance. He'd one mistake was all that I counted, but his willingness to push the pass a little bit more, particularly on your first cap, I think it's easy to do the safe thing. But he threw the odd offload, as I mentioned, to James Ryan, and kept the point of contact changing. And that's the difference between keeping teams on their back, on their heels, and on their toes. And I feel as though he's potentially heir to the throne at fullback. I just think his game, his all-round game, is a little bit more suited to it.
Right.
I didn't realise he had as good and as natural a kicking game as he had. He had one 50 or 60 metre hoof, went up and made the tackle. Will Connors counter-rucked and Ireland got a penalty. Those are the small moments that coaches are very aware of. And we'll scrutinize and identify as to why guys should and shouldn't be picked going forward. And I just think Hugo Keenan did an awful lot right, considering how well he started the season. And I was wondering whether he had the IQ and the IP to understand the different situations, but he no doubt does. And it'd be better for every experience he has at that level.
Very interesting. So if he's potentially heir apparent to fullback, as is Jordan Larmour, where is Jacob Stockdale?
I think he's, you know, Jacob Stockdale for me is still a world-class player going forward. I think he still has a little bit of work to do on some of his basics. You know, you've got to catch your balls at 15, particularly when you're uncontested. He missed one, yeah, you know, follow-up challenge when he kicked the ball deep. But there are small things that can be improved. I think he is box office going forward. And in fairness to him, his creation for the no try where James Ryan got caught for pulling back, I thought that was a brilliant piece of skill from him, you know, to identify the hole, but also the timing on the pass. So Jacob Stockdale, for me, is still very much the guy in possession. If he could just iron out some of the errors that he kind of seems to make each game, if he could reduce those and keep his attacking prowess going, I think, you know, him, Keenan, and one more, probably Conway for now. And unfortunately, Larmour's, you know, as much as he was the man in possession, now he's the guy in fourth, fifth place with Keith Earl still to come back too.
And you know, with Stockdale, and it does occur to me, obviously, that we far too often talk about what he doesn't do as opposed to the amazing things he does do. But in that context, when you talk about these mistakes which need to be ironed out and defensive lapses, is your interpretation of these that they're at times, you know, a lack of concentration, or is there some basic lack of game understanding in there that his talent has allowed him to, you know, get away with?
It's hard to know because I think it's probably the concentration piece, because, right, you know, particularly and I don't like highlighting you know, the deficiencies, because I think he's a very exciting player, and his problem is he set a stall out in 2018 with this incredible season, and that is the standard we now expect. And, you know, he got himself in the right positions for his intercept tries. You know, he made his tackles. He knew where the try line was. And then all of a sudden, when you're not as good in season two and season three, people start, you know, calling you out a little bit more. And that's the reality of starring at international rugby. Is that you set your own standard, and anything below that is unacceptable. We can see it in Conor Murray at the moment. His standards have been so high for the first 7 or 8 years of the last decade that, you know, when he doesn't quite reach that level that we're calling for his head. With regard to Jacob, I think it's just a bit of a confidence piece and a concentration piece. Right. I think, you know, that's what kicking and catching is. You know, you've got to, at fullback, you've got to catch the ones that you're uncontested. You just can't drop them. And, you know, he got himself into a great position on the missed tackle, because he, you know, caught the ball, great near touch finder, put it right to the touch line, and then came charging up and gave a defender an attacker an easy out. Those sort of things you just can't do. Come off the gas a little bit, wait for another defender to come with you, concede 5 yards, and then make a good quality impact. You know, it was, I don't know who was at fullback or who the winger, I think it was Bellini, was countering. His whole team was in front of him. So if you just hedge your bets a small bit, make sure you make that tackle straight away, your team's in the ascendancy.
You mentioned Conor Murray there. How did he go?
Yeah, I thought he was very solid. You know, he marshalled people around well. I think he picked some great passes. The pass for Jonathan Sexton's try that he picked to Keelan Doris was a beautiful pass. His distribution was very good. So I think a lot to be impressed with. And yeah, maybe we just need to, you know, get off it back a small bit and expect the Conor Murray of 2017. I'm not sure if we're going to get that again. You know, it was a phenomenal standard we saw. I don't think we see the same attacking threat as we did in, you know, years gone by, but that's a reality of getting a little bit older as well and losing a half a yard. So, you know, I think the rest of his game and the comfort that he brought to the side was enough for him to be selected for certainly for the coming season anyway.
Peter O'Mahony threw this fantastic offload, yeah, and made everyone go, oh, and you know, maybe that goes back to your point earlier. You know, we don't know potentially what the ceiling is if we put shackles on too much. Andy Dunn was on OTBAM during the week, and he was just making the point in response to, I think Jared put it to him, that a couple of the players had said when they arrived into camp, now there's a real emphasis on skills. You know, mm-hmm. first thing they do, let's improve our skills. And Andy Dunn was saying, like, too often in professional sport, not just rugby, there can be an assumption that just because you're a professional in your mid-20s, you've got all the skills down. And actually, we need, you know, not least in Ireland, to work on skills more right the way through. Were you working hard on actually improving your skills all through your career?
Yeah, I think one thing you have to do is make sure that you are able to throw those passes at training that you're willing to pass and throw in games. I saw Peter saying it doesn't happen by accident. That's 100% true. Mm. You have to be giving the license and have the confidence to be able to throw them at training. Otherwise, it's not going to come off in matches. And it's funny. It's unusual that the expectation is when you come into international camp is that you don't often have the time to practice a lot of skills because there's so much organization to sort out within a short space of time. Think about the blocks. It's Six Nations, Summer Tour in November. So you're not actually together as a squad a huge amount. And certainly other coaches in previous years have felt the onus was on the provincial coaches and the individuals to sort out their skills throughout the season to make sure that they're well equipped when they do come to playing international rugby. But I'm pleased to hear that they're constantly practicing and honing their skills. You talk about skillful teams, the All Blacks, the Australians, they are constantly at it. Every day is a ball playing day. So, you know, you can see it coming to fruition now with the quality of some of the offloads, particularly in the last 10 or 15 minutes. I thought Peter O'Mahony's offload, the vision to be able to see it, first of all, and then the accuracy of throwing it right into Bundiaki's breadbasket, like that was a really beautiful thing to see for a guy coming off the bench as well and trying to impress. But you've got to then follow that up with getting your basics right, and you know that drop kickoff will be a real kick in the teeth for Pete. It'll almost be one gold star with one removed.
I guess there are different points of emphasis, aren't there? You know, whether offloads were allowed or not allowed under Joe Schmidt, I don't know. But there's a difference between that kind of an atmosphere and them being actively encouraged. And we're working on our skills, and I want it to seep into your game and for it to just happen instinctively.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, you'd have to ask the players, but were they a little bit afraid in the last regime of throwing an offload that didn't stick? And I think that's an environment and that's a sense that players will get. And you could definitely tell that they tightened up the longer Joe was in charge, that as the training got stricter, that rollicking's got more vocal, that players went into their shells a little bit. And that's the last thing you can afford to do when you're a team like Ireland that are always going to be up against it against the better nations. You can't have players go into their shell. Whereas if you have that freedom to go out and express yourself and do the things that you want to do playing rugby, throw those offloads, make the occasional error, but also create a moment of magic like Peter O'Mahony, well, he'll live off that. He'll be buzzing off that one incident for the week. They've been talking about it in the press. It's gotten super slow-mo to beat the band. That's a nice one for his highlight reel. So those sort of things can have a positive knock-on effect to a progression of how the team plays when they do stick.
So I think we got the gist of your prediction earlier. You said this would be very difficult. This is a different France. This probably won't be 9-0. what are you expecting ultimately? France to win with a bonus point?
I don't know. I don't know about a bonus point. I think we were very impressive defensively, and you have a much better attacking team in France than we got against Italy last weekend. But I thought the decision at ruck time, when to go after the ball, when to leave it, when to target individual runners. I think we have to be a little bit careful that, you know, you look at the bust that happened in the first minute where CJ Stander got ball watching a little bit. I think that's something that we have to be very careful against France. You look at their angles of run against Wales coming from out to in. I think if you're looking in at the ruck and you don't have the ability to have that peripheral vision of see the ruck, but also see the runners coming from outside your eye line, you're going to get caught out. And Wales almost did on a couple of occasions. And Dupont is the master at picking that pass. So, and it's not just one or two. It's not just Olivon or Aldridge. You know, they all are capable of running those lines. And I think that's something, that's a real progression from this French team that you've seen Galtier improve with them.
Yeah. and no Gary Ringrose as well. Our rugby coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. A very final one. Leinster have Northampton and Montpellier. Connacht will have Pat Lam and Bristol again and Racine. And Munster will have Claremont and Harlequins. And Ulster have Gloucester and Toulouse. I understand you're going to do an in-depth explainer on the format of this competition. Take it away.
We couldn't possibly squeeze that into a 5 minutes at the end of the show.
No. But I understand 24 teams, there's two groups of 12. The top four from each of the 12 team pools go through. So Leinster, Northampton, Montpellier, Connacht, Bristol, Racine, Munster of Claremont, Harlequins, Ulster, Gloucester, Toulouse. We're probably at a point now where we certainly expect at least two of those four to make it through to knockout stages, regardless of format.
Yeah, you would. And I think if you look at how the four provinces have started this season, I think there's a lot to be very positive about. You look at the manner in which some of particularly the JJ Hanrahan try that Munster scored at the weekend. Like we're the Irish teams are here to play. Connacht have been impressive. Ulster may be a little bit slower than the other provinces, but still getting the job done. So I think you would definitely hope for two with the outside chance of a third team qualifying. I think, it's a new format, so we don't know what to expect. But I don't think there'd be anyone that would be very fearful home and away of any of that opposition.
OK, well, plenty of time to talk about all that. Brian O'Driscoll, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Joe.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.